Good evening. Welcome to the Salyer Report. Today is October 1st, 2015, the first day of the fourth quarter. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you from my hotel room in Amsterdam. I've got one whole side of the room is windows on the third floor overlooking the canals. And downtown Amsterdam, I arrived on Saturday and came in from Zurich by train, and I've been enjoying clear skies and sweater weather. We're having lunch with Catherine on October 17th. It's going to be open to the public in Amsterdam, so send it ahead to anybody in Amsterdam you know who you think would be interested. I'll be here in Amsterdam until October 23rd, and then I head to Scotland and then to Austin, Texas. I'm going to be part of the Secret Space Program Conference on October 31st and November 1st outside of Austin, Texas. You can get our special coupon code for a two-day ticket on the website. Just go to Salyer.com and you can click through. It's going to be Dr. Joseph Farrell, Jim Mars, a really great group. Our theme tonight is Deflation Bites, and that's because the global economy has been slower. Borrowers are struggling with their debt load. We kept things going with leveraging up first the developed world, then the developing world, and we have a fair number of players who are now choking on debt, particularly those who issue debt denominated in currencies that they can't print. As things slow down and players don't have the income they need to cover their overhead and interest expense, we're starting to see both problems on the debt and, of course, commodity producers pushing to keep their production going to generate more revenues. And, of course, you get a spiral down in prices. You need capacity to shut down so the market can rebalance. But that means commodity producing companies and countries and municipalities are going to be hurting. China's slowing down as well, and they're digesting the devaluation. The Fed did not raise interest rates, and we've been watching the response to that. It's really a sign of lack of confidence, both in the U.S. economy and the global economy. Yellen indicating that she was planning on raising interest rates by December, but we're seeing more pressure from Wall Street and the investment community for another round of QE from the Fed. S&P just said very likely that the ECB will extend and increase its QE. That story up on the website. I agree that that is likely. Money and markets, the market struggle. We finally got our long-awaited correction. As I have been saying for a long time, we're way overdue for a 10 to 25% correction. We're only down 6.71% for the year. So it's still not as yet a major correction. It's 6.71% is minor. But it's the weakest equity quarter performance in the U.S. market since the third quarter 2011. In fact, the only good part in the market has been the consumer goods industry. So we're really watching a consumer-led led economy. And just when you thought the American consumer didn't count for anything, they seem to be keeping everything going. If you dig in and look at the numbers, I'm afraid some of that is food prices going up and other sort of essential goods going up or mandated consumption, including the healthcare issues. So it's not saying to me that it's a strong economy. Although I must say, as I travel around Europe, people are spending and there's plenty of activity. It certainly doesn't look like a weak economy. I'll be doing the third quarter equity overview, so a lot more to talk about the equity markets in the third quarter. The German market now down 1.5% for the year. China down almost 15% for the year. I'm working on the Wednesday close since I'm in Europe, and I don't have the Thursday close yet. If you look at both the German and the Chinese markets, both of them are off from being up approximately 30%. So that's quite a correction down for them. The developed markets minus North America down 5.9% for the year. As I said, On several recent occasions, the European attract you can get very good, strong European stocks now at yields of 5% or better. And given that many of us have been struggling with no yields whatsoever, particularly on fixed income, 5% on a high quality stock looks attractive. And then if the ECB does do a QE, that could make those stocks even more attractive. So more about that in the equity overview. The emerging market's now down 16.57% for the year. Fixed income looks interesting. The aggregate bond ETF now off 0.5% for the year. The long treasury ETF, TLT, now down 1.89% for the year. The junk ETF, we've really seen the junk market spiral down in the last month. It's now down 8.5% for the year. A lot of that is credit problems driven by the commodity producers, including oil and gas. You've had a lot of the oil and gas guys issuing high-yield debt. And now with oil prices as low as they are, that's going to be a real problem. It'll be interesting to see how tough things get in that market, but it's going to put a lot of pressure on the junk bond market. Commodities down now 13% for the year. Gold is down 5.92% GLD, the gold ETF. SLV, the silver ETF, down 7.9%. And oil down 32.5%. Lots of stories to talk about in money and markets today. So let me just dive in. Unbelievably important, including on the financial side, the GMO revolt grows. It started with Russia banning GMOs, and then recently we had Scotland and France. Now Germany says they're going to ban GMOs. That has very profound implications for the sort of the American or the Anglo-American Alliance plan. Whatever the GMO plan was, it's failed. And despite the extraordinary force and aggression that the U.S. has used to try and get GMOs adopted globally, it's really it's really hit a wall. And if you look at who that list entails, both Germany and France, there's no way that the GMO plan fails unless Mr. Global says okay to fail. And if you look at what's along with what is essentially happening with the payment system response to Snowden, or now with GMOs, you can see a lot of shift away from the U.S.-driven plan. Interestingly enough, with the S&P down 6.5% for the year, Monsanto is now down 29%. Couldn't happen to a couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Auto wars. We're seeing software integrity at the heart of many different auto war competitions, which are embroiling and snagging the regulators with it. We see the latest brouhaha with Volkswagen's or accusations that Volkswagen's performance in terms of emissions very different than on the road than when it's tested. And that really goes to a software integrity issue. This is being made out to be a tremendous scandal. However, if you look at some of the recent ones, for example, the defective ignition switch from General Motors, that was attributed to or was believed to be linked to over 100 deaths. There's no deaths related to Volkswagen's admissions, certainly not as directly as General Motors. But software integrity is coming up again and again. We saw Ford hit with problems over overstated fuel economy on some of its issues. We saw Fiat Chrysler fined a big fine because of problems with vehicles, many related to software issues. More problems for Honda, Hyundai, on and on. And if you look at the number of automakers who haven't gotten hit with any of these investigations are fine. It's getting to be a smaller and smaller list. Among the ones who haven't gotten hit yet, Nissan, BMW, Mercedes, Subaru, and Mazda. But I think the auto industry struggle with software integrity is very much going to be part and parcel of software integrity issues across society. But software integrity can really translate into major safety issues on cars. So I think that's going to be one of the, along with cyber hacking, that's going to be one of the most sensitive areas. And of course, cyber hacking really comes up with cars. How the IT industry thinks they're going to do driverless cars in the face of these kind of software integrity issues continues to boggle my mind, but everybody continues to plow forward. But keep an eye on that because it's going to be very important. And I, for one, am happy to drive an old clunky car that can't be hacked from a distance. But it's interesting. I have a 2012, so I'm not sure how this is going to work. But again, I think this is going to be a very important issue. And I think a lot of these different problems are competitors outing their competition. And we're going to see more and more of that kind of outing of each other and outing in a way that embroils the regulators in very big fines. So this one has been particularly shocking for the Germans, and I heard a lot about it when I was talking with money managers in Zurich. Mind control, and that's really my title for the Pope's visit. I was shocked and continue to be shocked at the extent to which we, as a society, tend to buy into the platitudes and keep tolerating institutions which are proven again and again they're deeply corrupt. The spin is that Pope Francis is a good man struggling with a corrupt institution, which is a bunch of hooey. Christians don't behave this way. Jesus came back to the planet. He wouldn't need PR departments the size of Dallas, and he wouldn't need to hold mass involving entrainment technology. He wouldn't destroy Europe with refugee migrations designed to engineer corporate control of labor and then justify it with platitudes regarding poverty. It's very interesting. I've been reading a book on American slavery, and it talks about how it moved the slaves east from the East Coast when we wanted to build out the cotton plantations in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. And the design of the shift of the slaves stipulated that 70% had to be single males between the ages of 17 and 36. And as I was reading this, I went to the EU website to look up statistics on the refugees migrating in. Sure enough, 70% are single males between the ages of 17 and 36. Do we think this is an accident? No. What you're seeing is populations whose transportation costs are being funded, their smartphones, the cell service doesn't get turned off. It's extraordinary how many are sort of navigating with the help of smartphones. This is a very engineered movement. While the Pope was in the United States, he talked a great deal about climate change. Clearly, that's air cover for something that's coming. The question is what? One of our smartest subscribers wrote in and said, I think it's for something really big. But again, the question is what? Is it global carbon tax? If the GMOs are not going to work to back a global currency, maybe it's going to be a global carbon tax. I published a commentary on Pope Francis. You can see it on the website. One subscriber sent the article about Pope Francis saying God weeps for kids sexually abused by priests. You know, this is one of the most deeply offensive parts of the sort of the Catholic Church. If you had read my comments on the encyclical, you would know that I see no effort to convert the platitudes into real nuts and bolts changes in how the church or its networks money works, or real behavior. I think the pedophilia scandals were deeply systemic. They had nothing to do with horny priests. That's the cover story. And the reality is I think the pedophilia networks are alive and well, and the system continues to function essentially the way it does. So the notion that you get this nice guy with lots of platitudes and that changes anything other than a branding and PR effort, I just think it's mind control. And we're going to have to get beyond this kind of we're going to have to develop a stronger immune system to being tricked. And that's part of what John and I talk about in our interview this week. What happened at the UN? Not a whole lot. As I said, the Pope laid down some kind of flak on climate change. Clearly, the UN has come out with its post-2015 agenda, development agenda, and to the extent that that integrates into some of the ridiculous things we've seen coming out of HUD in terms of requirements to communities. It's a pretty ugly picture. Probably the most important thing that went on was the U.S. president meeting with the Chinese and Russian presidents. We don't have, I don't think we know a lot about what may have gone on inside of that. We do know that Putin's polls are up and globally and in the United States as a result of his performance. No proposal for a Palestinian state. I was looking for that. And nothing big that we know of plopping into the budget, which is pretty good news for me. But we do have a budget deal, it looks like, and that's partly thanks to the majority leader retiring, inspired by the Pope. So he, rather than get a real Republican stall over that and the debt limits, it looks like it's going to be smoother sailing. But let's see. Trans-Pacific Partnership, they're still struggling on a number of issues, including dairy issues with New Zealand and a variety of different issues on drugs. So that's going to be another down to the wire. So what happened in the UN was a lot of discussion and a lot of behind-the-scenes machinations and a lot of platitudes. But as far as we know, no big announcement and no big deals. Number six, Middle East politics. We now have Russia supporting Syria with a bombing campaign. In one sense, it's a minor role, but in another sense, the Russians have really called the U.S. bluff as to who's really funding and behind ISIS. This is a real interesting situation to me, because what has happened now with enormous amounts of money pouring out of the U.S. budget into a variety of private armies and private intelligence agencies and various covert operators and sort of different groups like ISIS, is we've really created a very significant population globally who are high-tech private warriors who have been raised in lawlessness and have very few common values with many, with most people. I talked about this in my review of the book, The Modern Mercenary, but I think this is a really very deeply disturbing development. And it's interesting to see Putin say, okay, well, we're going to step in and try and stop the lawlessness. They have a great interest in keeping that lawlessness away from their borders. There is indications that the Chinese have agreed to come in to support. And I think in combination with the pushback on GMOs and now this, it's a very interesting development with the rest of the world saying, you know, we've had it with this kind of behavior from the United States. So again, another pushback. The reality is, if we want a strong economy, perhaps we should stop destroying the economy. And there's nothing that destroys the economy more than, financing groups like ISIS. Big announcement, finding water on Mars. You kind of wonder how that dovetailed with the Pope's different platitudes in Matt Damon's new movie about Mars coming out at the same time. I'll be talking about a space-based economy at the Secret Space Program. I want to go through what a move into space means to the overall economy. And I think that's very important. So I'll be talking about it both in the speech and in Austin, and then we'll be talking about it in the annual wrap-up this year. Disinformation and unanswered questions. One of the biggest things that happened in September was all the things that didn't happen, including the often predicted global financial or equity market crash, something called Shemitah, the four blood moons. There was more fear. I've never seen that much fear porn since Y2K, and all concentrated in September. What was interesting, I talked to one of my colleagues and pointed out that none of those things happened. And she said, well, you know, it's very interesting because almost everybody I know has had something terrible happen to them, but it wasn't a big bang thing that they shared with the rest of the world. It was sort of something that happened to them intimately. They had an accident. They lost their job. They got sick. On and on and on. Well, that's exactly what happens when you get this kind of both deflationary spiral in the economy as well as sort of a breakdown of the field that comes with the kind of change we're getting going from 2.0 to 3.0. And let's face it, a lot of the the sort of push top down that's coming that's very harmful to humans, whether it was GMO or the spraying or vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. So you really have what is broadly some people refer to as a sort of whole push to on depopulation, which is making it very tough on people. I talked a lot in the our transcript, What's Up This Fall 2015, about shadow work and how that's hitting people. So you have a variety of things that are cascading down on individuals' head, and that's true. But these big bang fear porn scenarios, if there's any lesson to September, it's please do not listen to that. Please, please, please. Election, we continue to get an enormous amount of media around the U.S. presidential election. The reality is the only thing that's important going on in the election in terms of who wins right now is who's locking up what money and who's locking up what superdelegates. That's where the real story is, although we're getting some interesting burps of truth out. You have Trump basically pointing out what a bad idea Common Core is. And the necessity of having local control over education. And you also had Trump pointing out, you know, that vaccines cause autism. Pretty funny. What's also happening, which is very interesting, if you look at Carly Fiona, her background at AT&T and Lucent was basically building the one-way mirror for the CIA and intelligence agencies. I mean, if you don't like the fact that you have no privacy, you can absolutely hold Carly accountable for that. So the idea that people would talk about her as though she's clever or something, again, it's the kind of disassociation we're seeing with the Pope. The best comment I saw on the election over the last 2 weeks came from Don Cox in one of his weekly reports. He said, the presidency of the United States is not an entry-level position, pointing out that all this positive polls for people who've never had a government position is really not a very sensible idea. To give you a sense of how bad the absence of privacy is, thank you, Carly Farina, is the most totally creepy thing. I just mentioned on a conversation on Skype yesterday that the hotel bar here in Amsterdam has a cat named Mickey. And or Mikey, and shortly thereafter, my Twitter feed started to have ads for things to do in Amsterdam related to cats. About a week ago, when I was in Zurich, I checked times for the Il Trovatore tickets at the Amster Opera House, and ever since then, on almost every website I go to, the ads are related to various productions at the opera, at the Amsterdam Opera House. So, talk about creepy. Ask Catherine a lot of good questions this week. Hello, Catherine. Under the banner of What It's Worth, Goldman says oil may stay weak for the next 15 years, price range $20 to $50. Though I hate to say anything nice about Goldman Sachs, I had one of the Swiss money managers that I work with, who I very much respect, say he went back and looked at all the calls that Goldman had made over the last 10 years and calculated how many had turned out to be right. And discovered that about 80%, in fact, they'd called correctly, which tells me that that is basically the system telling you where they're going to go before they go. Someone else sent a link about the 11th holistic doctor found dead, New York City author and MD, Mitchell Gaynor. And I continue to post many of those links because we are seeing a major outbreak of what appears to be assassination of holistic doctors. Hi, Catherine. I'm one of your subscribers, and I cannot tell you how much I appreciate all you do. Probably you hear this a lot, but really, thank you. Here's a question. I found this website. I will take a look at that website. I have not yet. If I remember, I think it relates to a whistleblower whose information I find to be spotty, but I'll check it more thoroughly. Another sent a website on habeas corpus. I'll take a look, and the Garrison Institute. I'll take a look at that. Hi, Catherine. My wife is a dentist with a small practice. We've noticed the corporatization of dentistry over the past decade. Previously, only dentists could own practices. Now corporations can, and they employ dentists paying a fraction of their former potential income. Of course, coming out of dentist school in debt makes it hard for new dentists to start their own practice. My question is, given my wife does have this practice and is almost paid off, she took a loan to buy out, what would be the best approach going forward in the new regime where doctors, dentists, etc. are being squeezed? Does owning a practice have value in the future? Yes, it has value, but you're going to have to generate, rather than getting to the point where you can turn around and sell it, you're going to have to generate your equity value by taking cash out of the practice. So you want to organize it so that you figure when you're through, you shut it down, and you want to build your cash flow out of the practice and price accordingly. And it's very important that you keep an eye on how corporations are adding different services and sort of different best practices, and keep up with that. So there are many ways that an individual practice can stay highly competitive in this marketplace, but you got to keep an eye on what the competition is doing and how you can do it. Hi, Catherine. I'm a recent subscriber and coincidentally running in Canada's forthcoming election on the Libertarian Party ticket. I just linked to your interview with Marcy Kaptur because TPP is conspicuously absent as an election issue. Wow, that's amazing. Love the service so far, and I'm currently going through the podcast archives. Okay, well, keep me posted on what we can do to help. And good luck in the election. Dear Catherine, a friend sent me this newsletter from Jim Rickards that outlines the dates of likely U.S. dollar decline in value. I wonder what your opinion is on the article. Generally, I think it's not a particularly useful piece. If you look at the information on the SDR and IMF system, you could get a better and more factual description at the IMF website or Wikipedia. The endless insurances from Rickards that he's an insider are basically not particularly useful or relevant, and his predictions about the U.S. dollar over the last 2 years have been dead wrong, so I would be very careful. If anything, the dollar is up about 7% this year. It was up 12% last year, and the fear porn about the dollar that Rickards seems to promote, I don't follow him carefully, is not something I would recommend. Dear Catherine, the central banks have been acquiring a lot of gold in recent years. In your opinion, is this because they believe the price of gold will be rising? And if not, what is the reason that you believe they're acquiring gold? It's real simple. The price is low. Now's a good time to stock up. Makes a lot of sense. I don't think they're playing pricing games. I just think they know it's going to be a very good asset going forward. Just like I recommend that my clients have a core position, the central banks want a healthy core position. Dear Catherine, I greatly enjoyed your interview with Alan Michael Collange on the student loan scam. Can you elaborate more on how these current student lending practices have caused the university tuitions to skyrocket? Yeah, generally in any market, the more debt that's available and the cheaper it is, the more it runs asset prices up. The reality is, without debt, kids would not have been able to pay these kind of tuitions, and market competition would have resulted in much lower and more aggressive prices. Somebody sent a link from marketticker.org on Carl Denninger on rates and medical monopoly. I love, sorry about that, that's the noise of Amsterdam in the background. I love Carl Denninger railing on the medical system and sort of unpacking it. So thank for that. I'll post that one. Our interview was with John Rappaport. I was just so shocked at our willingness, both, you know, throughout the G7, to continue to support and engage with the machinery after it is proven every time that it's not trustworthy. But as long as they show up with a new guy with a new face who has lots of platitudes, we seem to be willing to buy back into it, whether it's the it's the government with the election and the campaign. We think a new face is going to make a difference when, in fact, we've proven again and again for many decades that it makes no difference. There's a difference between action and words, and you can have a new pope or you can have a new presidential candidate, you know, show up and say, yakety, yakety, yak. But the reality is, it's not going to make any difference. It's got nothing to do with the machine. And, you know, and if you look, for example, at what the Pope has done, you know, there's no change happening in the machine. You know, it's talk. So if we're not willing to hold people accountable and institutions accountable for their actions, that's why I always say, get the money back. Where's the money? Get the money back. You know, imagine if your bank stole $5,000 out of your account and said, well, we promise we won't do it again. You wouldn't accept that. You'd say, no, I want the $5,000 back. So we still are in a state of sort of mind control about this. Anyway, so I wanted to ask John to join me on the Solari Report and talk about changing our minds, because I think there is still we need a critical mass of people to change their minds. Anyway, so great conversation with John. I always love talking with him. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to be talking about the third quarter equity overview. And then Rambus, who I was hoping to have on last week, but his site got hacked and he had to delay, will be coming on to talk about the dollar, gold, and the S&P 500. Rambus is my favorite technical analyst. He runs the website Rambus Chartology, and he does a marvelous job of doing charts on the dollar, on gold, and the S&P 500. He follows all three of them. And these are three of the most critical prices to watch and markets to watch in the global economy. So we're going to be having a deep conversation. He wants to do it in written form because he depends so much on the charts. So we'll be doing a big written piece with the charts, and then I'll do an audio to go along with it. And I think that will dovetail very nicely with the third quarter equity overview next week. And then after those two, we'll talk about the third quarter wrap-up on October 22nd. So it's going to be 3 weeks of very intense looking at the financial markets and what they're saying, where the opportunities and where the risks are. So very interesting month. So until October 8th with the third quarter equity overview, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.